This is a CKTZ News update. I'm Lonnie Taylor. Friends of Cortez Island recently announced in November that the winner for this year's Joanne Green Environmental Award is Bruce Ellingson. I caught up with Mr. Ellingson to find out about what led him to be a leader in environmentalism.
At what point do you think you started becoming a champion for the environment?
In 1979, it was when Raven Lumber. I was interested in what was going on with the forest on Cortez at that time, and Philberg, who was the chief forester for the Comox Railway and Logging Company down in Courtney, Royston, they had railway logging all the way up to Nunez Hayward in the early part of the 1900s and so on. He assembled a bunch of logged over lands scattered all around. And when he died, probably around the middle 70s or so, it would have been likely, he willed all of the 7,000 acres of lands that he had, some of which were on Cortez, some on Quadra, some on Hornby and Denman, some on Vancouver Island, to the Vancouver Foundation. And in 1978, the regional district at that time started negotiating with the Vancouver Foundation to acquire these lands for what I will characterize as I would say they were probably intended to be managed in the island areas, especially by the island for the benefits of the island, sort of thing, like an initial community forest concept. They went into what they thought was going to be another negotiation session with the Vancouver Foundation, and they were basically stopped at the door and said, sorry, it's all off. Raven Lumber's bought it all. Raven Lumber bought the 7,000 acres that they'd been given by the Philberg estate, and they came over here and started doing the South Point development that year in 79. And the logging was done by a couple of local fellows who were good at what they were doing. And I walked through the forest at the back of Repoint Farm property there and came out onto this logged over area, and I just had that gut reaction. This can't be sustainable. This is just happening way too far, too fast. That's the starting point of my real curiosity about just what, if I don't think that's sustainable, then what is? As they finished off this development here in a matter of less than a year, we got into the courts with Raven Lumber and the regional board who were supporting them, because the Bearland Strata regulations had just come into being in BC, probably in 79 or maybe 80. And Raven, once they got the logging finished, they had put the road system in to accommodate the 10-acre minimum lot size that the community plan on Cortez had at that time for that area, thinking that they would have to create 10-acre lots when they subdivided and sold the land. With Bearland Strata regulations allowed them to average out the density of these lots, and that's why you ended up with all the smaller lots along the waterfront on South Point Road, and then the one big 159-acre Lavender Farm property there as the average to make them all come up to 10 acres, which is like a slap in the face as far as the community was concerned. So we ended up taking them to court, and we won. We won in the courts.
40 years you were on the APC for Cortez Island.
38 for that, and I was 2 years on the as a regional director in the 84, 85, I think it was. Yeah, when it was still the Comox Strath. My great-grandfather, Mike Manson, he was elected to the BC legislature 3 times. He died in office in 1932, I think it was, up in Villa Coola. Okay. So it runs in the blood to be engaged in local, community activities, as well as, you might say, politics on the small-scale activities. Did put in a provision controlling what can be done under Bearland Strata regulations.
You did?
Yes.
Okay.
We did.
When did that happen?
After we realized what had happened at the cabinet meeting when they said they didn't. 82, I think, was the appeal court decision in Victoria. And we, as I say, we walked out the door of the courtroom and found out that they'd had this cabinet decision 10 days before that. So, of course, that got us on there, got moving on getting it into our bylaws as quickly as possible.
One of your first battles with the logging companies was policy-based. The community forest concept is also policy-based. You guys created a situation based on what's on the books in BC, right?
I was minor way involved in the development of the community, the BC Community Forest Association, because I was at a forestry conference at UVic in, 98. When there was just the evolution of the idea of community forests in BC, and before the provincial government brought in the regulations setting up a community forest pilot program, it's a stop-and-go evolution that ended up with us getting a community forest tenure in 2013, finally issued. Because in the 90s, when we were dealing with M&B, Macmillan, Bloedel, they had the big pulp mill at Powell River, and they owned, I think they had the pulp mill in Port Alberni as well. They were a big timber company in the late 50s and 60s and later on. And they had H.R. Macmillan, who was the sort of the driver behind that company. He was into picking up cheap logged over timberland too for its future value. So in the 1950s and 60s, they had an agent come around to Cortez, I know of, and probably many places else, buying up cheap timberland. It was a vibrant coast in those days. Before the big timber companies got control of the big areas that happened in 1956 or 58, there was a Pierce Commission that was held in 56. My dad went down to representing the small logging operators because he didn't like to see it being all accumulated and given away to the big timber companies who would promising to put in pulp mills and big sawmill operations and stuff like that. And I think they accumulated something around 4,500 acres on Cortez during that process. And then when this bachelor logger that I mentioned, Elton Anderson, who did subdivision on Potlet, left the island and wanted to retire, he first of all offered these 600 acres of land that he had accumulated to my dad and Ken Hansen and some of the older guys on the island. But in those days, you couldn't make any money on it because it was logged over and there was no option for cutting second growth timber. And these guys were already involved in other things in their lives, so they passed up on it, and Elton ended up selling it to Macmillan Bloedel, the 600 acres, for $100,000. That's how cheap it was in those days.
Were you a part of getting the community forest established, Cortez?
Yeah, I've been involved. Since I started thinking to myself, what is sustainable? After Raven Lumber was carrying on during the 80s doing their logging, and the community on the island was getting less and less comfortable with the impact on the island, and we start saying to each other, look, we're going to have to live with the results of what's going on here. They come and cut their logs and sell their logs and make their money, and they're gone. They don't have to live with it. We do as a community, so we should. We probably had most of that decade in the 80s with, I'll bet you we would have had at least six meetings a year, mostly at the Gorge Hall, just talking about it and what we thought we could do about it and how much we wanted to get involved in it. That slowly evolved over that decade to the point where we developed a bit of a document that reflected an 80% consensus on the island supporting what eventually turned out to be a community forest. And it was also an evolution of developing an understanding of just what are the arguing points we can use justifiably against what's going on there. I would describe it as wandering around for most of the 80s in the complexities of trying to figure out, I know that all these things that are going on in the community, in the forest rather, that we are harvesting from, and there's just so many things going on. How can you decide how much you can cut and it's still sustainable? To compare what the leafcutter ants in the Central American, Central Tropical areas do in the way of harvesting from the vegetative growth around their colony areas. And they've been around for 50 or 60 million years, those guys, doing this same sort of thing. And they're taking somewhere around 15 to 17% of what of the growth of the vegetative leaf growth around their colony territory they control. Comparing the two dynamics of taking stuff out of a system, in the case of logging, of course, it's completely getting removed from the system, the logs that are going. And in the case of the leafcutter ants, I'm sure in the long run, in the 50 or 60 million years, all the mulched and fungus loaded and that's providing them with what food they need for their colony is all eventually getting recycled into the landscape there. It never leaves like logging does to a landscape. And then in the last 2 or 3 years, I've been getting more and more focused on nutrient drawdown by what we're doing with the harvesting of timber from the forest. Even just the last 6 months, I've been thinking, my common sense suggests that if you cut trees down and you cut the logs out of them and put them on a truck and they're gone out of the forest landscape, that on average you're probably taking roughly 50% of the nutrients that it took to grow that tree that's going out on the trucks, and you leave maybe the other 50% in the landscape. So each time you do that, you cut the old growth and 50% is gone. That's knocked it down by 50%. Next time you do it, it's down to 25% of what was there originally. Next third time you do it, you're down to 12.5%, and that's not very likely to grow trees very well anymore after you get down to that low nutrient reserves in the soil. So I've been more focusing on that. I started talking in terms of ecosystems, which is the common reference to a forest ecosystem, but not to humans. You're an ecosystem inside your skin. I am. Even the cells in our body, if you get the microscope on them and start looking around in there, you see an ecosystem inside that cell wall. Doesn't matter how small you look, it's still busy in there. Any ecosystem has to have enough nutrients to thrive. Otherwise, it's not going to. It's going to disappear. It's about as simple as that. No matter what scale it is, whether it's a little cell or a forest ecosystem or maybe the whole of the world, Gaia, you know.
If you could explain to me how the community forest works in terms of falling into the current policy that exists in BC around logging, but is able to establish that low extraction rate. How does that work? How did you pull it off? How did the Cortez community pull that off?
We're basically just riding on the reputation that Cortez has, the broad reputation for being well-connected. In addition to all the arguments that I'm laying out to you with the justification for being very conservative in what we're cutting, I think it gives us the moral justification for basically saying to Ministry of Forest, if they ever do come and challenge us on it, we're doing what the community wants us to. We went through a six-month process to develop the management plan when we first got the tenure, which we'd committed to with the community, and they want an ecosystem-based plan and a sustainable management. So that's what we're doing, because we don't think what you're suggesting we have to do, which is got had to sign on to in order to get the tenure, 13,600 meters a year, from their consideration, is sustainable. And we're aiming at cutting about one-fifth of that, one-sixth of that. If they wanted to make a stink about us cutting a lot less than what we signed on for because we had to do it in order to get the tenure, I think the shit would hit the fan so fast in the media. I think it'd be the same with Mosaic. If we're basically telling them we don't want them to come here and do a similar harvesting approach to what Ministry of Forest says is sustainable, Mosaic's even more aggressive than that. What they were proposing last spring in their meetings with the community was, depending upon how you measure it, anywhere from 6 to 8 times faster rate of harvest, because it was a much smaller land base, from what the community forest is presently doing, anywhere up to the worst interpretation, you could say it was 16 times faster than with the community, because we were just talking with them about the little belt of lands in the middle rather than the pieces at the Children Forest Trust over in Carrington area and the areas that they're negotiating with Tlahoose near the Tlahoose Village and reserve over there. So that was cutting it down to about 600 acres instead of the 1,085 hectares that they own in total. That you could be generous and say, okay, what you're harvesting is, even at that, still 6 to 8 times faster than what we're comfortable with on this island. And that's why you're running into this rejection of your proposal to do this, resistance to it. Yeah.
So yeah. You asked for studies from Molly Hudson about nutrient drawdown?
Yes, because I wanted to see what she had that she was relying on for being able to claim that she was doing it, they were doing it sustainably. It took her 2 or 3 weeks to get them over to me, the ones she eventually found, and there were 8 of them. And there was one that dealt with nutrients, and that was a 2-year study over on Vancouver Island up in the higher elevations that M&B had done back in the 90s for 2 years. And it was to do with nitrogen in the soil and changes in that. And they had a control plot where they didn't do any harvesting in one area, then they did a clear cut, and then they did some variable retention, leaving little groups of trees or individual trees standing, things like that, that they were comparing in that study. All the rest were just to do with the impact on wildlife or biodiversity or birds or other things in the different approaches that could potentially be used, apart from the clear cutting that most of them almost universally do, but none of them dealt with anything to do with nutrients. So I asked her, the next time I saw her, I asked her again for some more and explained that what she'd sent really did demonstrate anything of what I was looking for. And I'm not accusatory of them in any way, shape, or form. I'm trying to develop a conversation so I can figure out what they're doing. And I'm certainly wide open to listening to new science or new explanation. If they can show me something that convinces me that what they're doing is what they're saying they're doing, fine. If I can understand it, but I don't think I can, to be honest, knowing what I know now. But my satisfaction is just in doing what I can to make positive changes in the outcome of things on this island and elsewhere. I think the best chance we've got on Cortez is setting up a working example here that can show other communities what we're doing, why we're doing it so differently, and tell them why, what's behind it, and let them see what the results are like and walk away thinking, let's go back and talk to our folks back in our community and see if maybe that makes sense to us. Maybe we'll start doing that. You just never know. You just never know where there's a little tipping point on something and all of a sudden things start moving in that direction.
Lonnie Taylor, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.